Here comes another edition of the Fantasy Guru Podcast, featuring the latest news, player and team analysis, fantasy strategy, and more. It's Down to the Wire with Paul Kelly and Tom Brawley.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy Guru Podcast. I'm Paul Kelly, along with senior writer Tom Brawley from fantasyguru.com, here doing our thing at our new location, Tom, here at Podcast One. And very happy to be part of the Podcast One family now. We used a different service in the past, and we're cranking out a couple of podcasts here every week this preseason. And so far, so good. The quality is great, and we're happy to be a part of the Podcast One family.
Yeah, we're enjoying it so far. We've done a couple podcasts here since the beginning of August, and it's all gone well. And we hope you subscribe to our new feed, The Fantasy Guru Podcast on iTunes. You know, review, rate us. You know, we need those type of things to, you know, bump us up in the ratings, and, you know, any kind of support really helps us.
Absolutely. And, of course, you can listen on podcastone.com. You can listen through the Podcast One app, the fantasyguru.com app as well, or you can go to our site, fantasyguru.com as well. So this is my first podcast here, Tom, on Podcast One. So just a quick little brief recap as to who I am. I've been with the site now. I can't believe it. I was thinking about this earlier. I've been with fantasyguru.com now since 2010.
Wow.
So starting my seventh season now, hosting podcasts for the site. And of course, you and I will be doing a podcast together every Tuesday this season called Down to the Wire, where every Tuesday you and I will get together. We'll discuss the hot waiver wire options, kind of go through the guys that you are probably wondering about whether or not you should pick up in any given week. So we've got that we'll be doing. Done a fair share of writing for the site as well, too, over the years. I've done the production tracker article. Right now, I'm spending a lot of time with our draft reviews. It's a lot of fun. I get to organize and participate in subscriber mock drafts, and then I break them down and write summaries and analysis up there at fantasyguru.com as well. And then during the season, you know, we do our weekly projections, obviously, but we also do season-long projections. And you know, to give you an idea as to what we think guys are going to do for the remainder of the season. So when you click on those, you obviously see our numerical projections, but you also see a brief write-up for each player. I do those summaries, kind of trying to point out some things that maybe wouldn't be obvious to you if you're just looking at the numerical projections. So that's kind of who I am. And Tom, I know you've kind of done your intro here on a couple of the other podcasts, but
yeah,
definitely looking forward to doing the Tuesday thing with you every week.
Yeah, if people are new to maybe this is the first time they're listening, I'm Tom Borelli. I'm a senior writer for the site as well, and any of the big articles you see on the site, I usually have a hand in. I work pretty closely with John and Joe Dolan to you know, put out a lot of our main stories. And during the season, I help John with the waiver wire, I help put out the stock watch, and you know, our game previews, our player previews, and I do this podcast every Tuesday with you. Looking forward to September to get into it here.
So obviously this is not a Down to the Wire podcast because we're in the preseason, but what we're going to cover today, obviously we're going to hit on some news and notes here, some big stories that you guys are probably wondering about. We'll get into that. Also going to get into talking about tiers of players. We'll go position by position, and in every position there are tiers of guys, clear breaks where there's a drop-off in production, or at least in the production that we anticipate. So we'll go through position by position, talk about the tiers, try and identify where those drop-offs are, and we'll also kind of do the same thing for the first couple of rounds. As you're drafting through round one, round two, we'll try and spotlight where we think there is a drop-off in talent in those first couple of rounds. So let's get into some stories here, Tom, some news and notes, and we'll just touch on this one real quick. Dez Bryant yesterday suffering a concussion in Dallas Cowboys practice. He will not play in the dress rehearsal game this coming weekend. I certainly wouldn't expect to see him in the fourth preseason game either. So it looks like we've seen the last of Dez Bryant here on an NFL field until week one of the regular season.
But we've liked what we've seen so far. You know, ease some of our, you know, questions. You know, we had some concerns about him coming into the preseason here. He's coming off two foot surgeries on his feet here. And, you know, he looked good. And another thing that we'd like to see, Dak Prescott played well as his backup, as the backup to Tony Romo here. There were some major questions about the backup position. So we're feeling a little bit better about Dez going into the season now. But, you know, the concussion thing, it's not ideal, but, you know, you know, he's got two full weeks here, even more time than that, to get ready for the week one opener. So I'm not too concerned about this issue.
Another injury people are wondering about right now is Matt Jones, Washington Redskins, and looks like he's going to be out for the entire preseason as they try and get him ready for week one there in Washington. So we'll see next couple of weeks. We'll probably see a heavy dose of Rob Kelly, the undrafted free agent, who's actually kind of leapfrogged Keith Marshall here on the Redskins running back depth chart. And Marshall was a guy who had a lot of preseason buzz as somebody who maybe would be a potential sleeper for the Redskins this year. So far, though, he's getting outplayed by Rob Kelly.
Yeah, this is a messy situation here. Rob Kelly would be the guy that would be getting early work here. If Jones isn't ready to go for week one, all indications are that Jones will be ready for week one. But, you know, you never know with these AC sprains. I actually had dealt with those in high school. They can linger. You think you're recovering quick, and then you don't make any more progress. So it's a situation to watch. You know, a guy that we've been pushing the last couple weeks because of this situation has been Chris Thompson. You know, he's not going to be an early down type guy, but he's going to be getting passing situations and some change of pace situations. So he's a guy that we've been kind of getting sweet to here. And now maybe Matt Jones, maybe he falls a round or two here. Maybe he starts going into the seventh round and he starts to become, you know, a much better value here. So it's not ideal, you know, with Jones with this shoulder injury here right now, but, you know, maybe his price becomes a little better here, and you know, maybe he becomes your third running back that you take in a draft, and that's a much better situation to be in.
Yeah, for me, Matt Jones is one of those guys who I would like to have seen more out of him this preseason to kind of feel good about not only where he's at, but where that Redskins running attack is at as well. But we didn't get a whole lot of him this preseason, so I think if you're drafting him to be a starter, you're taking a little bit of a leap of faith there. But certainly when he gets healthy, that is expected to be his role there for Washington. Let's talk Deion Lewis. That was a bit of a surprise to people a few days ago when it was announced he would be undergoing a second knee surgery, this one of the cleanup variety, but it will keep him out 8 to 10 weeks. So I would expect he's going to start the regular season on the PUP list there, and probably somebody that maybe you don't even consider on draft day at this point, Tom. But LeGarrette Blount, James White, the other names in play here in the backfield for New England. And for me, James White is the guy that I think we're going to be seeing skyrocketing up people's draft boards here. And, you know, we can kind of look at the body of work last year. If we look at the last 8 games of the season last year when Deion Lewis was out, James White was a top 15 back in fantasy points per game in PPR leagues over the second half of last season. So things looking good for James White right now. We know he's going to reclaim that receiving back role in this Patriots offense, at least early in the year.
Yeah, and we got more news earlier today that it really is going to be James White's job because Donald Brown got cut very early today. So, you know, it's looking like a great situation. I'd anticipate him starting to go in that 90 to 100 range, maybe 90 to 110 range in terms of ADP. So that would make him about a, you know, 9th to 11th, you know, maybe 8th. Maybe he'll slip into that 8th round. He'll be an interesting guy, you know, if someone needs help early in the season. Maybe, you know, we'll touch on this guy in a second here, but, you know, maybe you take Le'Veon Bell in that mid to late second round and, you know, you're going to miss 3 games with him. Maybe you roll the dice with a guy like James White if you miss out on D'Angelo Williams in the 7th or 8th round. You know, a guy that's going to play early in the season and can fill that role, you know, be your RB2 for you for, you know, the first 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, and we can get into Lev Bell here, and of course the news now that suspension being reduced from 4 games down to 3 games, so good news there if you're a Le'Veon Bell owner. D'Angelo Williams' value takes a little bit of a hit there, and he's somebody that, you know, for me, as you mentioned there, going in round 7, round 8, a little too rich for my blood. And, you know, I love the production. I mean, we saw it last year in the games when Le'Veon Bell was not on the field. D'Angelo Williams was the number one fantasy running back in PPR leagues in those games. But now it looks like we're only getting 3 of those games instead of 4 of those games to start the year.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see just how, I mean, we have some new ADP data, you know, for Monday, but it didn't really have enough time to really get the, you know, a full breadth of what's going to happen to Bell's, you know, value here. He was a guy that was probably going a little too high for me to even consider. So I'll be interested to see if he starts creeping inside that top 15 again. That's a little too rich for me still. I'd be much more comfortable with him in the middle second round to late second round, after like the types of Lamar Miller and Zeke Elliott and Adrian Peterson are going off the board. But, you know, we'll have to see where that is. I think he'll be creeping into that late first round again with that extra game taken off the off his suspension.
Yeah, I'm with you there, and I do like the observation that you made there. If you don't want to make that investment in D'Angelo Williams for the first 3 weeks, I mean, James White is somebody who stands out to me right now as somebody who's going to be a very, very handy guy to have, especially in PPR. Now, if you're playing in a standard league, Tom, all of a sudden James White isn't worth all that much because he's not going to carry the football all that often. We saw it last year.
Yeah, Graham Barfield, our new analytics writer, touched on it in his write-up of the backfield here that, you know, a guy, I never target LeGarrette Blount, but suddenly his value gets a little better here because last year Deion Lewis averaged 7 attempts, rushing attempts per game. James White only had 1.9. So, you know, it's a major difference, I guess. It's 5 carries. Maybe LeGarrette Blount gets an extra 2 or 3 carries. You know, he becomes a little more palatable. Yeah, James White, he's got to catch the ball 4 times, at least 4 times in a game to really hit his value for PPR. Non-PPR, he's going to have to score touchdowns, and that's not going to be, you know, that's not his strong suit.
So if you're listening to this podcast, obviously football is a big passion for you. You know the players, you know the teams, you're learning about their strengths and weaknesses. Now you can put all that knowledge to the test and play for your shot at the $1 million top prize at DraftKings.com. It's just part of the $5 million in total prizes they're doling out in this week one contest. DraftKings.com, of course, the destination for 1 week fantasy football. We've all been, we've all to suffer through season ending injuries in our season long leagues. Well, 1 week fantasy means there is no season long commitment. You play whenever you want with the players you want. You just pick your contest, you draft your players. You want Antonio Brown, you can have Antonio Brown. You think Kobe Fleener is the big sleeper at tight end, you want him in your lineup, you can have Kobe Fleener. And you can follow your team live too. It's all at DraftKings.com. Pretty cool stuff. You can renew some old rivalries by challenging friends and family in a private league to prove that you're the superior GM, or join an existing league and go head-to-head with friends, co-workers, and fantasy players from all across the country. Hurry to DraftKings.com now to choose your players, and you could seriously cash in week one. Use the code GURU and play for free with your first deposit. That's code GURU to play for free for your share of the $5 million in total prizes in this week one contest. Only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details. All right, Tom, let's get into some player tiers. We'll kind of go through position by position and try and identify where we think the drop-offs are, and we can begin at quarterback where, you know, right now it's Cam Newton, last year's number one fantasy QB, and Aaron Rodgers, a guy who a lot of people expect could be this year's fantasy QB, kind of going as the first and second quarterbacks off the board. Are you putting those guys in a tier all by themselves, or does anybody else sneak in there for you?
I am. I have Cam number one, and I have Aaron Rodgers number two. I know John actually just, you know, switched up our rankings as well on the site. He went with, you know, he decided to lift Cam to the number one spot. We've had Aaron Rodgers at the top spot for a long time. But the Jordy Nelson new, you know, he hasn't made much progress this training camp. And, you know, we saw plenty last year, you know, when he was out of the offense, when they were trying to run the offense through a slot receiver, it didn't work out nearly as well. So, you know, that's a reason why we've, you know, bumped it down on the site. So right now I have Cam and Aaron probably in that, you know, fourth round range. I'm not, you know, I've never been the one to take, you know, quarterbacks too early, but, you know, that's when I would start to consider them in that late third, early fourth round, and I got Cam number one right now.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I've got Cam at number one, Aaron Rodgers at number two. Just like you, I'm not looking to get those guys just because I think, you know, the best way to build a roster is by waiting on the quarterback, maybe this year more than ever. But after those guys, that's really when the discussion kind of begins as to who you have at number three. We can certainly look at Andrew Luck there, the number one fantasy QB in 2014, and a guy like Drew Brees as well, I would consider as the third quarterback off the board. I mean, the ultimate model of consistency. He's been a top five quarterback every year for a decade there in New Orleans, and he probably will be again this year. So I think after those top two guys, you've got Luck, you've got Brees, and I guess Russell Wilson probably needs to be in that conversation as well, considering what he did the second half of last year.
Yeah, that's how I have the tier, but I have it organized a little different, but I have Wilson ahead of Luck and then Brees, but they're all really close to me. You know, I like Wilson a lot. If he can, you know, Tyler Lockett's a guy that's emerging for me. I've always been a huge Tyler Lockett fan all the way back to his K-State days, and I was really pushing John and, you know, us to really push the guy as a rookie last year, and he's really come on. I'm expecting big things from him, and if Jimmy Graham can give anything, I'm thinking Russell Wilson could really have a great season, and considering how messy that backfield is right now, it could really be on his arm. But then I have Luck, and then I have Brees. I think he's going to recover. Another guy that we've been really high on is Dante Moncrief. He's going to be playing the X receiver for them, getting a lot of single coverage, you know, away from T.Y. Hilton and Philip Dorsett. So I think he could be that guy. I'm trying to think, kind of like Allen Robinson last year, who, you know, was going in that, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth round. You know, everybody kind of liked him, but didn't want to reach too far for him. And then all of a sudden, 3 weeks into the season, you're like, oh, God, that's the guy. He's the guy that's going to break out, be the top 10 guy. I think that could be Moncrief this year.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people were looking for that breakout last year, if you remember, and then they signed Andre Johnson, and that kind of cooled things off for Moncrief there. And then, of course, Andrew Luck got hurt, and it was, in a lot of ways, a wasted season for those guys. But Andrew Luck,
people have really forgotten how good T.Y. Hilton is too in that offense, and that's why we like Luck a lot. T.Y. Hilton's as dynamic a player in the league. He can, you know, he can do it in the short, you know, passing game after the catch, or, you know, down the field. So you know, getting him back, you know, with Andrew Luck, and then if Moncrief takes that step, it's really promising there.
And you have to like what you saw out of Andrew Luck in his first preseason action this past week. I mean, he was very sharp, and you know, a lot of those passes were definitely you know, get the ball out of his hands quickly, let his receivers make plays. But as you mentioned, all of those guys can do that. They're all playmakers. They're all guys that, you know, can make things happen in the open field with the ball in their hands. So I like what I saw out of Andrew Luck, and I like the way that they approached offense in that game, and that Andrew Luck really didn't take any hits. They kept him upright. He did run with the ball a couple of times, and, you know, he got down. He didn't take any big hits there. So, I mean, for me, if Andrew Luck is on the field 16 games, I've got no doubt that he bounces back in a big way this year.
Yeah, I think people also forget about Philip Dorsett, too. I mean, I know. I said about Hilton, but Dorsett was a number one pick in 2015. This guy is dynamic, too. He's a guy I'm targeting real late in drafts. He'll probably – I think he's going to be one of our considerations for Mr. Relevant if he's outside the top 150. I'm not sure about his draft position right now, but he would be a guy I would look for late in the drafts, and just another reason why to like Andrew Luck.
So we've got kind of the same top five guys, even though the order's a little bit different there at quarterback. After that, I've got a bunch of guys who are all really very close together. So much so that I almost have one giant tier of like the next six or seven guys, guys that I would be satisfied with as my QB1, not anybody that I'm going to go, you know, move up to try and get or be, you know, proactive in trying to grab a round or two early to make sure I get them. I feel like there's a bunch of guys, you know, names like Carson Palmer and Eli Manning and Big Ben and Blake Bortles. I mean, to me, I'd be fine with any of those guys. I think I like Carson Palmer, maybe the best of the bunch, but I'd be satisfied with any of those guys as a QB1 if I'm waiting to grab one until, let's say, you know, round 8 or 9.
Yep, I actually have those four guys clustered in my next tier, starting with Palmer, Eli Manning, Blake Bortles, and Big Ben. Bortles has been on the rise here in the preseason. He's looked really sharp.
Really good.
Yeah, and we saw in that first preseason game, Allen Robinson is as good a receiver as there is in the league. He'll go out and make plays. He's the new Dez Bryant. You know, I hate to overrate the preseason and look too much into it and, you know, overreact to it, but it's hard to deny what they have at receiver and the way he's looked so far in the preseason. And on the other hand, I had Big Ben ahead of Blake Bortles and Eli Manning just a week or so ago, and just the vibes in Pittsburgh just haven't been great here. Marcus Wheaton's been missing time with this mysterious quad injury.
Sammy Coates.
I mean, he looked good in camp, but once the shoulder pads and the game jerseys came on, he's looked awfully shaky. Two fumbles in that first preseason game. You know, some drops, and then he makes a spectacular catch on the sideline. He flashed a little bit on a particular play in the second preseason game. You know, obviously, it's tough. We haven't even seen Ben actually on the field yet. We'll get the chance this week in the third preseason game. See what I'd love to see, you know, just how they're going to run the offense with those four receivers. Obviously, Antonio Brown's going to be on the field, but they have a second-year receiver that they really liked, this slot receiver, Eli Rogers, who got injured at the end of the preseason last year, and they, you know, basically redshirted him. So he's an interesting type. I'd like to see how they plan on using Wheaton, Rogers, and Coates together. If Rogers is going to play a lot out of the slot, that's not great news for Wheaton and Coates, because they could be splitting snaps on the outside, so... It's an interesting situation in Pittsburgh. It's been a little unsettling so far. But, you know, these guys, they have some uncertainty. That's why they're in this third tier. Palmer, obviously, he looked awful last year in the playoffs. The throwing finger in the playoffs. And the Panthers, he just looked like an old quarterback there. So, you know, we can't forget about that. And Eli Manning, he's got... you know, two good receivers right now. So that's certainly a concern.
That's it. Yeah. Tom Brady is somebody that I'm throwing in this tier as well. And I know he's going to miss the first four games there for the Patriots. But Tom Brady, to me, when he comes back, is a top five quarterback for fantasy. And I think if you grab him as, you know, the eighth or ninth quarterback off the board and you pair him up with somebody to start the first four games, I think when it's all said and done come the end of the year, you do have top five production at your quarterback position. So I'm grouping Tom Brady in with those guys as well, knowing that I do need to get somebody else relatively quickly, whether it's a Derek Carr, who's got a favorable schedule the first month of the season. Phillip Rivers has a really nice schedule the first month of the season. So if I'm going to grab Brady to be my guy, I'm looking to get one of those guys probably a couple of rounds later.
Yeah, that's Tom Brady is so hard to deal with, you know, this draft season. I don't know what exactly to do with him. He's still, in our latest draft ADP information, he's still the 75th guy taken off the board, 7th quarterback. So it's tough to really justify taking a quarterback that high that's going to miss the first four games of the season. But, you know, we've seen Brady, like you said, he has top five potential when he's on the field those last 12 games of the year. I kind of have him in a tier by himself. I'm probably not going to have him in many drafts because of how high he's going. But like you said, The two guys I have in the tier after him are Derek Carr and Phillip Rivers. They have beautiful schedules that first 4 weeks of the season. And, you know, it's tough to justify, you know, maybe taking Brady in that sixth or seventh round and then taking Carr or Rivers a round or two later. But, you know, that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to find somebody to pair with Tom Brady who has a favorable schedule, or maybe just stream in those first 4 weeks.
Yeah. So where's the cutoff for you? Because in a typical 12-team league, I do have 12 quarterbacks that I'm totally comfortable starting as my QB1, which is why I'm very happy to just wait and let the other owners kind of make those early investments in the quarterbacks. I do have 12 guys that I'm comfortable with, you know, going to battle with as my QB1. Do you have 12 guys, or do you feel like you need to kind of, you know, grab one once maybe the first six or seven are gone?
Yeah, I have 12 guys as well. I have Brady as my 10th, and Carr and Rivers as my 11th and 12th. And after that, it's a mishmash of guys. All have their upsides and all have some downside, of starting with like Matt Stafford, Kirk Cousins. Guy that I think is kind of flying under the radar here a little bit is Andy Dalton. You know, obviously his weapons, you know, aren't what they used to be with Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu leaving. And, you know, if Tyler Eifert misses the first couple weeks of the season, that's a big loss for him down in the red zone. But I think people have forgotten how good, you know, Andy Dalton was at the beginning of, well, through the first 12 weeks of the season last year. You know, AJ Green's a freak here. I still kind of like him if you want to wait, and he's available very late in drafts. You know, maybe that's a guy you decide to pair with Tom Brady. You know, he's going off in that 17th, 18th, 19th range of quarterbacks. So,
yeah, Andy Dalton last year, career high in completion percentage and a career best in touchdown to interception ratio as well before missing the final three games of the season. Let's transition here and get into the running backs, and it looks like we've got a consensus here in that Todd Gurley is the first back off the board. Before the Le'Veon Bell suspension came down, it was at least discussion there. Is it Lev Bell or is it Todd Gurley? Now it seems to be Gurley. Putting him in a tier all by himself right now, Tom?
Well, I do. But interestingly, I was going through our ADP information yesterday, and David Johnson has actually jumped him to be the number one running back. It's I have to preface this. It's only by 1/100th of a point, but that tells me that they're pretty close in drafters' eyes right now. But I have Gurley as the top running back, and I have him in a tier by himself at this current point.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And then right underneath him, I do have David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, and Peterson all lumped together there in kind of a second tier right underneath Gurley.
I also have Lamar Miller in that same group, too. I think that he's going to be heavily used. I have DJ, Zeke, Lamar, and AP. I have some major concerns about AP. I mean, yeah, he finished as one of the top running backs last season in terms of, you know, points per game and everything, and but something didn't look right. He was fumbling a lot. I just have some concerns there. He's going higher than I'm probably going to be willing to take him. But I'd much rather go for a guy that has a little more upside with Zeke Elliott or Lamar Miller at this point.
Okay, and how about Devontae Freeman? Because people are kind of all over the board on him. Obviously the number one running back for fantasy in 2015. Bit of a different situation, though, this year with Tevin Coleman back in the mix and a lot of people expecting there to be a shared workload, at least with the carries there in that Atlanta backfield. And Devontae Freeman, a lot of his value this year may come out of the passing game. So, I mean, at what point are you comfortable taking him? Would he be in the next tier of guys, let's say your third tier of guys below the names that we just mentioned?
Yeah, he's in the next tier for me. I'm a little hesitant right now, though. Tevin Coleman... They wanted him to be the starter last year, and
he was,
and then Devontae Freeman took his job and didn't look back. But he did have a shaky end of the last season. I have him in the next group, but I have him as the eighth running back right now. I have I love what I've seen from Eddie Lacy so far this preseason. He's my sixth running back. I know that's probably higher than a lot of people, but I like what I've seen. And you know, if Jordy Nelson takes a couple weeks to get back to full strength here, you know, he could be heavily used in these first couple weeks of the season. And, you know, my next guy is Le'Veon Bell. We touched on him a little bit earlier. I have him slightly ahead of Freeman at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's kind of where the cutoff is for me. After that, I've got some guys, and look, almost all of these running backs have question marks, but after that, there is a considerable drop-off for me down to the next group of guys. And for me, some of the names in that group are Jamaal Charles in Kansas City, C.J. Anderson in Denver, McCoy in Buffalo, and Mark Ingram in New Orleans.
Yep, that's my next four guys. I got C.J. Anderson a little bit ahead of Charles. I'm a little off on Charles this year. Spencer Ware has looked really good this preseason. He's catching he's catching the ball out of the backfield. That's something that he didn't really do a whole lot in the at the end of last year. Whenever you know he took over, Sharkhandrick West did a lot of those duties. I'm loving. I'd much rather have Spencer Ware late in a draft than Jamaal Charles at this point, early in a draft. I'm thinking we could maybe see a 50-30-20 split, or maybe even 60-30-10 split between those three backs. I think Jamaal Charles, his days of owning that backfield exclusively might be over.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think there's no doubt that you're right. That look, they're not going to look to get Jamaal Charles 20 touches a game.
Yeah, and he's coming off a major knee injury too. I mean, that's a big reason why too. You don't want to just throw a guy out there to carry that many times right off the bat. So.
Yeah, look, they re-signed Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West for a reason. You know, they brought those guys back, signed them to new deals. They plan on using those guys. So I'm with you there on Charles. One other name I'll just throw out here, just because I know he is in the top 12 for a lot of people. He's not in my top 12. Doug Martin for Tampa Bay. He's somebody obviously had a terrific season last year carrying the football, but Charles Sims was certainly a factor on passing downs there. And, you know, he's somebody who's kind of on the cusp for me, but he's not quite making it into my top 12.
Yeah, and if anybody is a fan of the site and visits fantasyguru.com, you'll know that we've been a little lower on Doug Martin than most. We actually like his backup a lot more. Charles Sims, you know, he's a lot more affordable. He's in that 100 range. 100 to 110 range. You know, he's a guy that can catch the ball. He's going to take snaps, you know, on third downs from Doug Martin. And if Doug Martin goes down at any point this season, you know, Charles Sims is going to own that backfield exclusively. So, you know, he's a guy that Doug Martin is a guy that we haven't really, you know, been on too much this season.
Yeah, I think as you mentioned there, Charles Sims, if there's no Doug Martin, Charles Sims is returning RB1 production in PPR leagues. So I actually like grabbing him a little bit later on more than I do getting Doug Martin, let's say, early in round three. And again, with Doug Martin, really no role in the passing game. He had zero catches or one catch in 9 of his 16 games last year. So he pretty much has to get it done on the ground and get into the end zone for you to be happy with his fantasy production in any given week. All right, let's move on. Let's go wide receivers here. It seems like everybody has the same top three guys: Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham. Maybe the order of Jones and Beckham can be switched around, but it seems like everybody's taking those three guys. And then at that point, you start thinking, okay, well, maybe now it's Gurley or David Johnson. So, I mean, for me, it's certainly Antonio Brown at number one. I have Beckham at two and Jones at three. I don't know what the order is that you have, but then after that, I've got a clear drop-off.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty clear, and this is for draft, too. I mean, I think it's pretty clear, even in non-PPR formats, that these three guys are the top three guys that should be off the board. Actually, John and I had we had a discussion after he did the show yesterday about who should be number two, Jones or Beckham. Ultimately, it looks like we've decided to keep Jones in our own fantasyguru.com rankings as the number two guy. But, you know, it's very close. John was making the point that Odell Beckham, you know, he's got the better quarterback situation. But they have pretty similar types of situations in terms of, you know, others around him. You know, there's not a whole lot that their quarterbacks have to throw with. In Atlanta, they do have the better running game. They have a better options out of the backfield. So I can see the argument to be made for Odell Beckham, but I still lean towards Julio Jones and his freakish skills a little bit more.
All right, so we've got those three guys. After that, I've got a tier of four guys. I'm guessing you may as well, but for me, the next man up is DeAndre Hopkins. Then we've also got A.J. Green lumped in there, and even with this concussion news for Dez, I'm okay putting him in that second tier of receivers. And Allen Robinson, look, somebody that, you know, certainly did it last year. Earlier this summer, I wasn't exactly all in on Allen Robinson just because, look, the Jaguars improved the defense. They got Chris Ivory. Nobody expects them to throw it as much as they did a year ago. But they've looked so good, and he's looked so good in the first two preseason games that I'm back in on Allen Robinson. So I've got him in that second tier of guys underneath the top three.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was a believer after I saw that first game. I think I just forgot how good Allen Robinson was. And then that's a product of, you know, the Jaguars don't play a lot of, you know, prime time, and they don't get a lot of action necessarily on TV. So, you know, we don't get to see Allen Robinson a whole lot. And seeing him that first night, you know, going absolutely nuts, I'm just like, this guy's really good. Why do I have him as the eighth, ninth receiver? I bumped him up ahead of Dez Bryant just because I like his certainty in situation there a little bit more. Obviously, Dez, we have some injury concerns at his quarterback position with Tony Romo there. So that's why I'd have Allen Robinson slightly ahead. And at the fourth spot, I know we've been teetering back and forth. I know Joe Dolan is adamant that he wants A.J. Green ahead of DeAndre Hopkins. And I can totally see it. His target share should be going up, you know, with Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones leaving, and if Tyler Eifert's going to miss the beginning of the season. Green's going to get a lot of targets there. But I'd still lean towards Hopkins, even if Hopkins' targets, you know, dip a little bit this year. I think the situation at quarterback is going to be much better with Brock Osweiler. You know, if he sees 15 to 20 fewer targets this year, maybe those targets become more efficient, though. You know,
yeah.
There was a lot of sloppy play at quarterback for the Texans last year. I think those targets suddenly become a little more efficient, and I think he was at about 57% catch rate. Maybe that gets up into the 60, 61, 62% range, and, you know, that's how he makes up for that loss of targets.
All right, so we've got we've kind of gone through the top seven guys. As far as your third tier, your guys right underneath those names, how many guys do you have here lumped together? Because I've got another six, seven guys here that I would be comfortable selecting, let's say, in round number two of a PPR draft once we get past those first seven.
Yeah, it's a real cluster for me. I mean, I have them broken up to Brandon Marshall, Brandon Cooks. I like Mike Evans this year, probably a little more than most people, and T.Y. Hilton into another group. But I had Jordy Nelson in that group just a week or so ago, but his slow progress this training camp, I have had to bump him down into the injury-prone group as I have it, as it looks like. I have Jordy Nelson, Alshon Jeffrey, and Keenan Allen all together below that foursome. And, you know, all those three guys, I'm probably not going to have on a whole lot of teams because, you know, people are a little more keen on them. They're going to be drafting them in the middle of the second round, and that's probably going to be a little too rich for me. But if they do fall, I'll be there to take them in the third round, but I don't think it's going to happen with any of those three guys.
Let's transition over to tight ends. Obviously, we've got Rob Gronkowski at the top of everybody's tight end list. For me, though, Jordan Reed is right there with him. And if I have a choice of Gronk in the first or Jordan Reed, let's say at the end of the third or the beginning of the fourth round, I'd rather have Jordan Reed. And I know the injury issues and those concerns there obviously are big, and they're certainly relevant. Jordan Reed, though, when he's on the field, Tom, he's a difference maker. We saw it last year for fantasy. And you've got Gronkowski playing with Garoppolo for the first four games there. So certainly, I definitely still have Gronk at number one. But if it's Gronk in the first or Jordan Reed about 30 picks later, I'm going to take Jordan Reed about 30 picks later.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think with Jordan Reed's ADP, it's kind of built in there, the durability questions there, so which makes it, you know, a little more feasible to take him in the third, fourth round. But yeah, I have the tight ends really broken up to three tiers right off the bat to start with Gronk, and then a tier for Jordan Reed and a tier for Greg Olsen. I really see a little bit of separation there between the three guys. But like you said, I totally agree that Gronk and Reed have, you know, pretty comparable skill levels when everything is equal. This Gronk, it's been real little weird here. He left last week with an undisclosed injury. He hasn't practiced since. I guess the reporters have said that, you know, he hasn't been walking with any noticeable limp or anything like that, but it's still a situation to watch. The Patriots could be a little, they're going to be cautious with Gronk, which is a concern if, you know, if he has some type of minor injury during the year and they're like, well, do we play him? Don't we play him? Well, we need him for the playoffs, so let's rest him. So it's not out of the question that they lean on, lean to being more cautious with Gronk at some point this season and sit him out a week, which is a little scary.
Yeah, and I'm with you there on Greg Olsen as the third tight end in a tier all by himself. After that, I've got a bunch of guys who are kind of grouped together. A lot of people excited about Kobe Fleener in New Orleans, although I don't know if you saw the comments from Coach Payton today, basically calling Fleener a work in progress right now. I mean, there was the thing last week where he was listed as the fourth tight end on the depth chart.
They moved
him up to one. Yeah, it's been weird. They moved him up to one, but then the comments from Payton saying, well, you know what, he's kind of a work in progress right now. To me, That makes me a little bit uneasy, especially when I have other comparable options like Travis Kelce. I've got kind of right there with him, and even Delanie Walker in Tennessee.
Yeah, I have to say, like, I don't totally believe stuff that Sean Payton says, you know, with some of his past comments. So I don't know if he's just trying to throw us off the scent of Kobe Fleener, or, you know, maybe he is trying to send the guy a message. I really don't know. it's an interesting situation, and you know, one to kind of watch here. You know, you'd like to see him a little more involved in this third preseason game. We'll see if he gets a little more action. But yeah, I have Kelce, Fleener, and I don't really know what to do with Tyler Neifert right now.
Yeah. At least he's doing a little something now. He's moving around. He's jogging now, so the news is good.
Yeah, if I knew Tyler Eifert was going to miss just the first 2 weeks of the season, I'd have no problem, you know, lumping him together with Travis Kelce and Kobe Fleener. But there's so much uncertainty around his situation right now. You know, if he's just starting to move around, that he's at least a month away, you'd think, from returning to action. So I'm a little concerned with Eifert. I don't know what exactly to do with him.
Much like we did with the quarterbacks here, I'll ask you here with the tight ends. Typical 12-team league, where do you draw the line as far as 12 tight ends that you're comfortable starting? Because for me, once you get down to 11 or 12, I'm not really happy with the names that I've got there at 11 or 12. So I am looking to go a little bit earlier on the tight ends. And the guys I kind of have near the bottom there would be like Jason Witten, who I'm not really excited about, or, you know, Gary Barnage in Cleveland. Well, you know, we'll see what's going to happen there with RG3. So for me, I'd rather get somebody that I've got, you know, in my top 8 or 9 tight ends if I can.
Yeah, I totally agree. I got 10 guys right now that I feel comfortable starting, you know, every week. And that and those final guys are Delanie Walker, Zach Ertz, and Julius Thomas. So, Antonio Gates.
Antonio Gates, yes. I have too. Yeah,
yes, he's the 10th guy for me. After that,
by the way, quick note, Tom, on Gates, and I think this is relevant because I think it is going to play into it. He needs 8 touchdowns this year to become the all-time leader for most touchdowns by a tight end. You better believe they're going to try and get him that this year. So I'd be surprised if Antonio Gates didn't catch 8 touchdowns this year.
That's an interesting I didn't realize that. So that's something good to keep in the back of your mind there. Especially that division's going to be pretty tough. If they fall out of contention late in the year, you know, they have nothing else to play for. That's something to keep in mind, you know, for your DFS leagues and, you know, for starting him later in the year if they have nothing to play for. But, yeah, I only really have 10 guys, so if I miss out on those 10, I'd much rather just say, screw it, I'm waiting until real late in the draft and taking 2 flyers on Vance McDonald and Zach Miller. Or, you know,
I was just going to say Vance McDonald.
Exactly.
Like, if you're waiting till the very end, I mean, look, we saw this guy do it the end of last year, and I'm not telling anybody to go out and grab Vance McDonald starter.
But we talked a lot about him at the end of last year in the waiver wire, Down to the Wire podcast last year.
Yeah. I mean, last 6 games last year for Vance McDonald, 60-plus yards and a touchdown in 3 of his last 6 games. So, I mean, we've seen him. He's a capable receiver. There does seem to be a connection there between Gabbert and McDonald. It's been on display this preseason. We've seen them hook up a few times there. So, again, not saying go out and get him as your starter, but
the last
looking for an upside guy. Like, yeah, last round of your draft, you're looking for a Mr. Relevant kind of name. I think Vance McDonald could be that guy.
Yeah, there's been a surprising amount of buzz on Torrey Smith this year. I just don't see the fit with Blaine Gabbert.
He's got 1 target this preseason.
Exactly, and it wasn't – I just don't see the fit between the two, the quarterback and the receiver. I'd much rather have – it's pretty clear that Blaine Gabbert is going to check it down to Vance McDonald in the middle of the field right now. So, you know, he's a guy I love in the last couple of rounds.
Let's go through, I mean, we've talked tiers through all the positions. Let's also kind of go through the first couple of rounds and where you think those drop-offs are. For me, round 1, here's where I don't want to be picking, number 8. Because I've got 7 guys that I'm perfectly happy with selecting with my first round pick and a PPR. At number 8, it's decision time for me. So I don't know where that number is for you. If I have my druthers, I'm picking early in round 1. But I'm at least okay if I've got anything 1 through 7. After that, it starts to get a little bit dicey for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm fine with the first 7 picks I got. And obviously, we know the top 3 with AB, Julio, and OBJ. But, you know, after that, I like Hopkins, Green, Gurley, and Allen Robinson as my, you know, 4 through 7 there. So it gets a little hairy at 8. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, that's where you start considering David Johnson there. I guess you consider Elliott or Dez Bryant, or I know you're not high on Peterson, but I think a lot of people would look at him there as well. You know, so yeah, so there's a real drop off for me there.
I think there's a real desert at that 11 or 12 spot too. I mean, at least at like 8, 9, and 10, you can justify DJ, Zeke, or Dez. But you know, if you get to that 11 or 10, 12 spot and those 10 guys are gone, it's pretty tough. I have Brandon Marshall right now with Lamar Miller and Gronk, but it's a little scary there.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then getting into round two, there's a lot of receivers. A lot of them that I'd be happy with in round two. Can't say the same thing for running backs, though. I mean, as I'm going through my tiers of running backs here, I've really only got seven guys that I would even consider selecting with a first or second round pick. So for me, the rest are all receivers and Gronkowski.
I totally agree. Although I, like I said earlier about Lacy, I've been warming up to him a little bit. So, you know, maybe if I get, A.J. Green or DeAndre Hopkins in that first round, and, you know, Eddie Lacy is looking enticing if you really feel like you need to get a running back in the middle of that second round. And I don't think Le'Veon Bell is going to make it to the middle of the first round, middle of the second round, which is, you know, I kind of like him in that range. So
I think Le'Veon Bell is a prime candidate for the guy who's picking at the end of round one in those back-to-back
exactly.
picks. You know, I see him taking a receiver and taking Le'Veon
a flyer
Bell.
On Le'Veon Bell. And that's not a bad strategy. As I went through there with the 11th and 12th pick, you're in a tough spot there. I just did a draft not too long ago for the flex leagues, and I got Ezekiel Elliott 11, but you know I still didn't feel fantastic about it. I haven't been taking many running backs in the first round, so that Bell in that beginning of the second round is a pretty good spot. You know, if you want to take a flyer on getting that running back that could be your standout player.
Anything else you want to touch on here, Tom, before we call it a day?
That's about it. I mean, two receivers that we didn't really talk about. Amari Cooper is also, I feel like he's also kind of in that range with those. I've seen him going in the late second round
with him there.
Exactly. And Demaryius Thomas is also kind of in that mix, too. I've seen him go in the late second round. But I tell you what, the Demaryius with Trevor Siemian, I mean, you can say what you want about Mark Sanchez, and he stinks. I know he stinks. He's going to turn the ball over. But at least you can say for Mark Sanchez, he gets the ball to his top receivers. And that made me feel a little bit better about Demaryius Thomas. I can't say the same about Trevor Siemian. That guy's going to be a ball control, don't turn the ball over, don't force it into spots. So if that happens, I have to start dipping Demaryius down my draft board quite a bit. And it sure looks like that's the way the position is trending there in Denver with Siemian getting the call for the third preseason game, getting the start there.
So thanks, guys, for listening to our podcast here today. And, of course, we're going to be cranking out lots of great podcasts, not only this preseason, Tom, but throughout the regular season. We've got certainly what I would consider the standard bearer of football podcasts, the John Hansen-Greg Cosell podcast that happens each and every week. It is a must-listen throughout the regular season. And, of course, our guys Joe Dolan and Graham Barfield are going to be cranking out some great content here at Podcast One as well. So if you've ever subscribed to our podcast before, we ask you to please resubscribe, review, and rate us on iTunes. It's the Fantasy Guru Podcast. Also, if you've got the Fantasy Guru app, you're going to want to update that as well, so the podcasts will self-populate there on the Fantasy Guru app as well. So for Tom Brawley, I'm Paul Kelly. Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Guru Podcast, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Stay tuned for 60-second AP News headlines.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire. Hillary Clinton is demanding once again that Donald Trump release his tax returns. To reporters writing on her campaign plane, Clinton accuses Trump of a number of questionable business deals over the years.
The list goes on and on. The scams, the frauds, the questionable relationships, the business activities that have stiff workers, refuse to pay small businesses.
Clinton is to be at a rally in Tampa this afternoon. Trump, for his part, is campaigning today in Virginia and North Carolina. AP White House correspondent Julie Pace reports Trump has been able to dial back the off-the-cuff remarks.
He likes to go in front of these big crowds and be more freewheeling and play off of their energy. Now he's going out there with teleprompters and with scripted remarks, and it really is a testament to his campaign leadership that they've gotten him to a point where he's willing to do this for at least a couple of weeks.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire.